Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And I do hope your Tuesday, December 16th, in this third week of Advent, is going well for you. Thanks to Vanessa for sitting in for me yesterday and doing a stellar job, as she always does. So grateful for her support and the support of our wonderful team at EWTN. Dominic and I were traveling back from overseas, and we are home safe and sound in the frozen tundra of Michigan. Landed last night, and it was like, I don't know, 6 degrees or something. However, we understand the temps are going to be balmy, at least by Michigan standards, by the end of the week, 44 degrees. Woohoo! That's Bermuda shorts weather, practically, for people in this part of the country. Anyhow, do hope you're having a great day so far, moving closely toward the big Christmas season next week. But in the meantime, we are going to enjoy Advent. We have some pretty dynamic guests this morning. Let me tell you, I'm very excited to be interviewing for two segments Dr. Stacy Trinsansko, since she's a PhD, and she's taping two, I think, Life on the Rock programs going to be airing in January. This is super important because she's all about IVF and why it's not the way for couples who are struggling with fertility issues. This is such an important issue because there's so much confusion on it. And it was interesting because there was a wonderful story that the Register, EWTN News, and Catholic News Agency put out, I think it was last week, where they had the results of some of the studies that we've done. And what I found fascinating, and I was talking to my producers about this, Rich and Deb, about how as long as people are informed, when they're informed about what the church teaches and why, guess what? They change their minds. Generally, if you just ask them up front, what do you think about in vitro fertilization? Do you think that couples who can't have children should be able to access this type of so-called medical treatment? They say yes. But then when you go back to the same Catholics who have learned about the church teaching and why the church explains that this is not right, then they side with the church. So to me, this is good news because it means that once the teachings are explained, it makes sense. And people say, oh, I never thought about that. So we'll discuss with Dr. Stacy. She's in studio for two segments this morning. And then very honored to have Professor Roy Shulman with us. He is a convert to Catholicism from the Jewish faith, and he is going to be joining us about rising anti-Semitism around the country and the world, taking a look at that horrific shooting in Australia, Bondi Beach, over the weekend. There's still developments, obviously, about this story regarding the gunmen and regarding the people that were there. What happened? How did this whole thing develop? And if you have an opportunity to pull up the statement of the Archbishop of Sydney, and we'll have a report, a Vatican News report about that this morning, he's saying that there were signs. There were a lot of signs that the government just did not do anything to crack down on anti-Semitism in Australia, the land down under. So we'll discuss that with Roy and get his take on things in terms of what he's seen as a Jewish convert, a convert to Catholicism, raised Jewish, and someone who sees a lot, I'm sure, in that area. And then we'll talk about the second hour of the program as we get closer to that segment of the show. In the meantime, let's take a look at the forecast for you from the National Weather Service. Heavy lake effect snow continues into east of Lake Ontario. Today we have a lake effect snow warning remaining in effect, and a second Pacific cold front will cross the northwest, and that will happen tomorrow, followed by yet another atmospheric river. Each of these features will bring additional periods of gusty winds, mountain snow, and heavy to excessive rainfall with a renewed flooding threat. So concerns being raised for the state of Washington, especially with that rain that is coming and has been going on for the last week or so. It is a Tuesday morning. Great to be with you here at EWTN's Catholic Connection, Monday through Friday. Let's get started. It's 9:04 Eastern time already, and we need to check the news because it's a busy news morning, as you can imagine. Well, police are confirming the gunman in the Bondi Beach mass shooting did have ISIS flags in the car. Speaking at a press conference earlier today in New South Wales, Police Commissioner Mal Lanyon also said there were IEDs in the vehicle.
We continue to work through the motive of this tragedy, and we'll continue to do so. And I think it's really important that our investigators continue to be given time to do that.
At least 15 people were killed on Sunday when a father and son opened fire at a Hanukkah event at the Sydney beach. More than two dozen remain hospitalized and some are in critical condition. The 50-year-old gunman was fatally shot by police while the 24-year-old is in critical condition. And the Pope has reached out to the Australian community, sending prayers and a message of support. As Kelsey Gussie with Vatican News tells us, a telegram was sent to the Archbishop of Sydney
today.
In his telegram, Pope Leo expressed his deep sadness over the loss of life in the Jewish community, who had gathered for a Hanukkah celebration. The Holy Father offered a spiritual closeness to all those affected by this senseless act of violence. The telegram shared the Pope's renewed hope that those tempted to violence will undergo conversion and seek the path of peace. He offered his prayers for all those still recovering, as well as consolation for those grieving the loss of a loved one. Pope Leo commended the dead to God while invoking the divine blessings of peace and strength upon all Australians. Earlier in the day, Catholic Archbishop of Sydney, Anthony Fisher, issued a statement calling for change. The Archbishop described the attack as a brazen and callous disregard for human life. He called the hatred some people have towards all Jews as an unspeakable evil that must be repudiated by every Australian. Any attack on an individual Jew is an attack against the entire Jewish community and is an affront to our way of life as Australians. Archbishop Fisher pointed out that over the last 2 years, an atmosphere of public anti-Semitism has been festering, which led to intimidation, division, demonstrations, and the normalization of incendiary language. He said these actions have turned up the temperature and perhaps contributed to radicalization, and he stressed that this must stop. The Archbishop pointed out that all Christians are children of Jews. So, an attack on the Jewish community is an attack on everyone.
Australia, meanwhile, even though it has some of the most strict gun laws in the world, is vowing an additional crackdown on guns and also looking into anti-Semitism after the attack against the Jewish community. Nick Harper reports.
In Australia, where mass gun violence is rare, has shocked the country and led to calls from officials to further tighten gun restrictions. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says he's looking at additional tightening on what are already strict gun laws. He's also said that his government is working to eradicate anti-Semitism. But some within the Jewish community have voiced feelings that an attack of this nature was inevitable, pointing to growing anti-Jewish sentiment in the country. A father and son reportedly carried out the attack. The father was killed in the incident. The son remains in hospital, along with dozens of their victims. Nick Harper reporting.
Heightened security, meanwhile, continuing in the New York City area following this past weekend's deadly attack at that Hanukkah celebration in Australia. Meanwhile, Rabbi Shane in Tenafly, New Jersey, is honoring Rabbi Eli Schlanger, who had deep ties to Crown Heights, Brooklyn, and was among those killed in the Australian attack.
To have a Chabad rabbi on the job, like, you know, he was murdered as he was doing the Hanukkah event.
Governor Phil Murphy of New Jersey says there is stepped up security as well at synagogues and Hanukkah celebration throughout his state in reaction to the shootings. The New York Police Department increasing security as well at Jewish houses of worship and Hanukkah celebrations. President Trump, meanwhile, hosting a Hanukkah reception this evening at the White House. The event has been held by the sitting president since the tradition was started by George W. Bush back in 2001. Yesterday, the president issuing a statement on the Jewish holiday, saying his admiration and his administration continues to stand firmly with the Jewish people. He defends the right of every believer to worship freely and without fear of persecution. Officials in Rhode Island say they are working around the clock to apprehend the man who shot and killed two students and wounded nine others at Brown University on Saturday. The Providence Mayor Brett Smiley said officers from several agencies are working hard on that case.
This community will heal from this. We will move forward. But that doesn't make light of, and I'm certainly not making light of, the fear and anxiety that persists. But the only way we're going to move forward through it is one step at a time, and today's one of those steps.
He added that students should feel safe to return to campus. Rhode Island Governor Daniel McKee says that he would like nothing more than to see an arrest. Residents have been on edge after a person of interest was detained by police, only to be released soon after. Police, meanwhile, releasing new video of the suspect dressed in black, wearing a mask, who can be seen walking away from the Ivy League school after the shooting. The son of Hollywood director and actor Rob Reiner is now behind bars in custody after Reiner and his wife were found dead inside their Los Angeles home. That, according to jail records. Morgan Chesky has more on the investigation into the apparent stabbings.
Overnight, police canvassing the affluent Brentwood neighborhood, with investigators saying they intend to speak to every member of the Reiner family to, quote, get to the facts of the investigation.
Reiner's son Nick has been open in the past about his struggles with drug addiction and his tumultuous relationship with his famous father. Rob Reiner was 78 years old. His wife, producer Michelle Singer Reiner, was 68. President Trump says he thinks an end to the Russia-Ukraine war is getting closer. Speaking from the White House, the president saying he did speak with a number of European leaders just recently who want the war to end as quickly as possible.
Things are going along pretty well. 27,000 soldiers were killed last month. Shouldn't happen. Should have never happened. Should have never started. That war should have never, ever started. But it did, and we're trying to get it solved.
Trump saying too many people are dying as a result of the fighting, and the sooner it ends, the better for everyone involved. The president saying they are working to get Russia and Ukraine on the same page. The president also declaring illegal fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. He signed the executive order yesterday while awarding Mexican border defense medals to U.S. military members at the Oval Office.
With this historic executive order I will sign today, we're formally classifying fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction, which is what it is. No bomb does what this is doing. 200 to 300,000 people die every year.
Trump saying drug cartels are running rampant on the Mexican border before he took office. The president saying the soldiers honored took part in important border operations. The Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, who was also in attendance at the medals, were originally given to U.S. soldiers back in the 1800s. And Scott Carr tells us the president is on the road, planning a visit to North Carolina later this week.
The former chair of the RNC and current Republican senatorial candidate Michael Whatley announced on social media Monday that Trump is scheduled to make a stop at Rocky Mount on Friday. The White House hasn't released specifics of the visit, but it comes just over a week after President Trump kicked off what was billed at the time as a major push to address affordability concerns among voters. I'm Scott Carr in Washington.
The White House says the president will act if Congress cannot come up with a bill to fix rising health care costs. That's according to White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt, who was asked about the Senate voting down dueling partisan measures over Affordable Care Act subsidies. She said the president will be addressing the issue soon. Health care costs will spike for 22 million Americans if the ACA subsidies are allowed to expire at the end of this year. And Rory O'Neill tells us more Americans are now admitting to using AI while on the job.
45% of American workers say they've used AI at least a few times this year. That's up 5 points from the last Gallup survey. People working in knowledge-based jobs, tech, or professional services were more likely to use AI. Retail, healthcare, and manufacturing less so. So why turn to a bot? To consolidate information, to generate ideas, and 36% said they use it to learn new things. I'm Rory O'Neill.
And, of course, it's that time of year again. The holidays are upon us, and the U.S. Postal Service says it is prepared for the shipping rush. There are some important shipping deadlines to keep in mind. Tomorrow is the last day to send your items off in time for them to arrive by Christmas if you're using the Postal Service, Ground Advantage, or First Class Mail Service within the lower 48 states. The deadline is Thursday for Priority Mail Service delivery and Saturday for Priority Mail Express. It is a Tuesday morning. It's December 16th, 2025. Great to be with you. Do you know or understand why the church teaches what she teaches about in vitro fertilization? We've got an expert coming up next, and this is a question that comes up over and over and over again. But it's amazing what happens when we learn what the church teaches and why. We'll be right back. When Deacon Dom and I give our reversion story and our marriage testimony, we always say how we feel like when we were coming back into the church, and guess what? What a concept, actually reading what the church taught on the covenant of marriage, God's plan for marriage, as Julie and Greg Alexander always talk about, but also about the issue of contraception and IVF. We were like hitting ourselves in the head over and over again. For those of us old enough to remember that commercial, ooh, I could have had a V8. Where was I all these years? If we just stop and take a breath and say, okay, There must be a reason the church said this. The church has been around for a very, very long time, and the Lord said it's going to be with us till the end of the age. He promised that. Okay? So why don't we stop and read what the church has to say? Because it's so beautiful, it's for our benefit, and it's the only thing that makes sense. Just saying. Someone who knows that all too well and does a great job of getting that across is our guest this morning. She's in studio with us because she'll be taping this afternoon for episodes on Life on the Rock, which will be airing in January. We'll give you more details for that. Stacy Transenkos is a PhD, and she teaches at Holy Apostles in Connecticut and also Seton Hall in New Jersey. And she has a doctorate in chemistry from my husband's alma mater, Penn State University, go Lions, and worked as a senior research chemist for DuPont before converting to Catholicism. I'm not going to read your whole bio, Stacy. It's very impressive, but we would take up 5 minutes of the show if we read your whole bio. So God bless you for all the great work that you are doing in this area. So first of all, welcome to EWTN. I know you've been on the journey home before, but welcome, and we can't wait to see your shows on Life on the Rock. So what brought you to the point where you wanted to start teaching and talking about in vitro fertilization? And thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on and for talking about this very important topic. What got my attention as a convert was the use of the word gifts for children in the catechism. Mm. I had never heard of that. I thought of all people as like highly complex composite systems of atoms and molecules. And I had this very, very materialist worldview. And hearing that children are gifts got me to thinking about what that means to be human and what it means to bear the gift of a child, what marriage means. And you're right. It is such a beautiful teaching. It's not something, unfortunately, I teach a lot of college students now, even in Catholic institutions. It's not something that people hear much in our culture, though. What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to bear a child? What does it mean to be married? And you really do need to understand all of those things for this very sensitive topic of IVF. So I see this as a great opportunity to tell the good news to people, so people will know that they have human dignity. We're not just saying for embryos, we're saying everybody, all children deserve love and have human dignity.
And I forgot to mention your book, so I want to put that out there right now. Okay. From Sophia, IVF is not the way, the false promises of artificial procreation. So I imagine you'll be talking about this on Life on the Rock. How's the book been doing so far, Stacy? It's an important, important topic, as you mentioned.
I think it's a hard sell. I mean, the book's been doing okay. I mean, I would have loved it if President Trump had read the book and said, yeah, "We're changing everything. No more IVF in the United States." But it's intended for a Catholic audience to explain to people the depths of the teaching on this topic, so that you can then go out and talk about what the church teaches, because it is a great message. And once you explain it to people, they start to understand the wisdom in the teaching. And so the book is intended to do that for people. So people who've read it say they really appreciate it. They're grateful for the guidance from the church and to have it all laid out. The book has a 10-step syllogism. I'm very left-brained. I like logic, but it also has interviews with people who had used IVF and regretted it as Catholics. So it's got both the left and the right, the heart and the mind in the book.
If you were advising President Trump, what would be your policy recommendations? Because this is very frustrating to me. On the one hand, he's so pro-life when it comes to abortion and really cracking down on Planned Parenthood and other abortion industries. And yet when it comes to IVF, he's all in big time.
And he's just like so many people. He hasn't thought the situation through.
Yeah, but he's got so many good Catholics like Rubio and Caroline Leavitt working for him. I don't know to whom he's speaking.
I don't know. And I feel like part of the difficulty with this topic is that you have to get underneath it so much. You can't just start talking about embryos and freezers. You can't just start talking about infertility. You have to get all the way down to God exists and what God revealed to us about being human, body and rational soul united. And then what God revealed to us about human dignity and procreation. But the book is titled IVF is Not the Way, because I take that title from the Didache, the very first catechism that begins, there is there are two ways, the way of life and the way of death. And mm-hmm. the way of life is love of God and love of neighbor. So I would start there with President Trump. This is a social justice issue. Mm-hmm. This is how we treat our children most fundamentally in our society, how we look at them not as commodities or products or means to an end to fulfill the desires of the adults. This is how we as a society say that children are gifts, and we're going to fundamentally treat them that way, strengthen the family, strengthen marriage. And that's the reason I chose the title IVF is not the way. But it's the kind of thing, I mean, I've been talking about faith and science for 15 years now. It's the kind of thing where you need time to explain it to people, but you also need one-liners and sound bites to get people to start to listen. So I would love it if I could just have like 2 hours with President Trump and talk to him.
It would be amazing. Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Stacy Strantzenkos, and she has a PhD in chemistry from Penn State University. Of course, we're talking about her latest book, all about IVF, and you can find it, of course, on the EWTM Religious Catalog, IVF is Not the Way. She's in studio with us this morning because she's taping some episodes for Life on the Rock, which will air on January 18th and January 25th. So you want to make sure that you watch those as well. And again, she's in studio this morning with two segments because I have a ton of other questions for you, Stacy. Okay, first of all, let's talk about IVF being a violation in terms of the rights of the child. Why do you say that?
I chose those words because I think that will get people's attention. What the church is fundamentally saying is that all children have a right to be born of the love between married mother and father, united integrally, body and soul. And so they have that right. And when IVF is used, they're denied that right. They're conceived in a lab. They're not conceived between the intimate physical union of mother and father. And, you know, honestly, that is a hard thing to sell in our culture because people say, why not? Who cares? So what if the couple loves each other or if it's a single person that's going to have the baby and loves the baby, who cares? Well, because the child has a right to be born of that love. Things have to be right to become one. Things mm-hmm. have to be right between the mother and father because they're not just going to create this child. They're supposed to work in cooperation with God to bring this child into existence because they're going to raise this child in love. And even my editor said, you're being a bit idealistic, though, because we'd all like to be born of that kind of love. But so many times that's not the case. You have many examples outside of IVF where there isn't that perfect body and soul unity between mother and father. Even married parents that fight, you know, or argue or, right. or not. And okay, but we need to know what the church teaches, and it's not an ideal. It can be achieved. That's how we grow in virtue. We're not expected to be perfect in virtue. We're expected to pursue virtue. And so knowing what children deserve gives us all at any point, wherever we are in our life as parents, to turn towards those children and to give them that.
Right. And it doesn't mean that things might not happen in the marriage. Let's say, God forbid, if the marriage breaks down or something. But if you're shooting for what the church teaches, there's going to be that benefit of those teachings that are going to be flowing from the family onto the child.
Yes. You always want to turn toward the good. If mm-hmm. you get off track, and we all do, you turn back toward the good to get on track. And so, you know, that think about adoption in that context. The child has had its rights violated. It doesn't, you know, there's something that has gone wrong. The child's not going to be raised by its biological mother and father. Okay, what's the next thing you can do in turning back toward the good? You try to fill that. You try to find a loving mother and father who can adopt the child and fulfill, and, you know, return what was violated, return the rights back to the child that was violated. That's why adoption is a loving option, because we're trying to restore something. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, if there is divorce or children conceived outside of marriage or children conceived by IVF, we always want to turn back toward the good to restore what was lost. And it is so radically fundamental about what children deserve.
Right, exactly. More with Dr. Stacy. She's in studio with us for two segments. Second coming up the other side of the break. And she's also taping today at EWTN in Irondale for Life on the Rock, which will air January 18th and January 25th. You do not want to miss those episodes. And also check out her book, IVF is Not the Way, from Sophia. We'll be right back. Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection, having an extremely important conversation with Dr. Stacy Trusenkos, and she's in studio with us this morning for two segments live, and she's also taping later today for two episodes of Life on the Rock, which will air in January. So mark these dates down, January 18th and January 25th, and we'll talk about them as we get closer. We're talking about her book, IVF is Not the Way. She also appeared on The Journey Home back in 2019, so you can look up that episode as well. Okay, Stacy, continuing our conversation, in terms of people reading the actual documents, we were chatting during the break. This is something that I really encourage. I know a lot of people don't have time to sit down and read, but the documents, many of them are not that long, and they're so important to read, regardless of how long they are, because it explains. People just automatically take, not everyone, but I did, speaking from my own experience, just those, you know, but we're kind of like parrots echoing what the secular culture tells us. Well, the church is being hypocritical. As the church says, they're all about pro-life, and yet they want to deny a couple who wants children the opportunity through IVF. And there's no discussion. This is another thing that drives me crazy. It's like the wild, wild west with IVF out there. And are people even aware of that, do you think?
I don't think so. I think it's such a sensitive topic that people who aren't directly involved in it just don't want to talk about it. I don't think they know why. You know, we got one group of people who will just say, I'll go along with what the church teaches, fine, but they don't really know why. That's not going to be enough. You need to know right. why so you can explain it to other people. But mm-hmm. the most people that I encounter, they're like, what is that? What is IVF? What is the process? And even just explaining to them what the process is, their eyes are opened. It's not what they thought. It's not just getting the baby that the couple dreamed of. It's actually pretty brutal on the woman's body, and it requires mm-hmm. the man to do something sinful. And, you know, it's very expensive, and there's almost always embryonic children who are left stored in cryogenic freezers. So,
yeah.
Just knowing that is enough to get a conversation started.
All right, so let's talk about what alternatives, because if folks will say, well, if a couple really wants a child, what do they do if they don't turn to something like IVF?
This is, again, my own experience here as a Catholic woman, also pretty feminist. You know, I got this PhD in chemistry, this big job at DuPont, and I was single and didn't think I needed any of that other traditional stuff. Coming into the church and reading the church's teaching on, they call it natural family planning, but it's really just knowing yourself, knowing your body. The church says you are body and rational soul, and you need to take care of your body. And you go to an obstetrician, and they just want to talk pills and you know, medicines and things like that. But the church's teaching taught me to understand my hormones. And by understanding your hormones, you can understand what's going on with your body. And that's where the other alternatives come in for IVF. In fertility care, Creighton model, all these different names that we have in the church that teach women how to do this. My friends that practice this and that teach it tell me they encounter so many women who aren't infertile at all. They just think they're infertile. But they're, for example, their cycle is not 28 days, it's 26 days, so they're fertile on a different day than the doctor's telling them, you know, every 28th day you'll be able to conceive, and they're not infertile, their body's just a little bit different. And so once they understand that, they conceive, or there might be something that needs to have surgery to fix. And so these alternative methods help you first understand your body and understand what's going on so you can address that. And then if there's still an issue with infertility, there are other choices like adoption. And that's a can of worms to get into. I just want to say, you know, people who've adopted tell me, don't ever go into that flippantly. You need to be ready to adopt because the child has already suffered some kind of trauma many times, and you need to be ready in your own life to do that. But just to think about it in terms of IVF, why go out and do this process that the church teaches against just to get the baby with your DNA? Because that's what mm-hmm. you're really wanting. Why not, if God has given you the burden of infertility, and we all know as practicing Catholics, you don't get everything you want in life.
Right.
If you've been given that burden, that cross to bear, why not turn that love you have to give toward a child who desperately needs it out there mm-hmm. and ask God to send you you know, the child that you're desiring, because God hears us and He knows. And I'm in my 50s now, and I don't think I would have understood this in my 30s or maybe even my 40s, but the greatest gifts in life, the greatest blessings, have always come when I followed the hardest teachings. When
exactly.
I conformed my will to God's will.
So true.
When I didn't really want to, I look back and I'm like, I see now. I understand
now. Right, right. And that's the thing. It's very hard to explain. And again, you're speaking from personal experience. I'm speaking from personal experience. When you're going through a tough time, and you may want something that is very good. For example, people who want children, that's a beautiful thing. They want yes. to bring forth life from their marriage. That's what they're trying to do their best to follow church teaching. And many of them are so heartbroken. And in some cases, they're desperate because they can't physically have a child, but maybe God has something else in mind for them, either adopting or, as a catechism says, if you are not able to have children and choose not to adopt, then give yourself sacrificially to the mm-hmm. church, and God will fill that longing in another way. So there are options. We just need to really think and pray about it and say, okay, Lord, what do you want for us?
Yes. My prayer every morning is, God, grant me the grace to do your will.
Yeah.
And I need
yeah.
that grace, because I don't always want to. But it is like a constant prayer of your life when you try to walk with God. You're constantly casting toward God, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to
mm-hmm.
do? I've even said prayers to God in the grocery store, like, which kind of mayonnaise am I supposed to buy? You know? I just want to get it right, God.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Just pray, you know, in everything, right? But pray unceasingly, as St. Paul taught us. Why do you think, and obviously I think you've already answered that question, but as we wrap up, we have about 2 minutes left, that we need to continue to have a national conversation about IVF, Stacey?
It's a beautiful moment. In a way, I'm glad President Trump brought the issue to the forefront, because it's going to help us get our head around what it means for there to be children in our culture. Look at all the children that you see. They are gifts. They are children. It's going to change the way we think about education and schools and society and justice. And then even what we do with the children in our own marriage. And my oldest child is 36, and that person is still a gift. We as parents and adults in society get to watch this unfolding, this becoming of these young people growing up. It's one reason I love teaching. And so we really need to embrace that and pass that on as wiser, older people to the younger people. You are a gift. God put you here for a reason. And that giftness starts the minute you're conceived. You're a gift mm-hmm. from the very, very beginning.
Well, I'm so happy you wrote this book, because as far as I'm concerned, and being a deacon's wife and all the teaching that goes on at the local level at the parish, this needs to be in the office of anybody working in marriage counseling, anybody working in engagement prep, marriage prep. So they have this. This should be discussed, of course, in the marriage prep. This is so important. Yes. IVF is not the way. The false promises of artificial procreation. So in terms of what else we can do as Catholics to spread the word about what the church teaches, what should we do?
Always pray. But my husband says my way of evangelizing is just put a hand up and start yapping. I just talk. I just talk a lot.
No wonder we get along so well. Hello.
Just keep saying it. Just keep yeah. repeating it. But I've had so many, and I have a real heart for young adults. I've had so many come back to me later, and they appreciate that I can keep my head, that I can keep my cool, that I can make a logical argument,
right.
that I can show compassion, and that I'm consistent with what I'm saying.
You go, girl. Love it. Thank you, Stacey. God bless you for your great work. Dr. Stacey Trensenkos, again, she's taping for Life on the Rock on her new book, IVF is Not the Way, and those shows will air in a few weeks. We'll be right back.
Gratitude saves us from an unhealthy negativity. That's why people in Alcoholics Anonymous have to count their gratefuls every day. It safeguards relationships because it lets people know that we don't take them for granted. Gratitude protects us from pride because it reminds us that we aren't the ultimate source of all our blessings. And not only is gratitude a key to actually enjoying our blessings, it makes us more successful. See, people like to bless, promote, and support a humble and grateful person. It's just more enjoyable than blessing someone who acts entitled. Thankfully, it's not too difficult to unleash the power of gratitude in your life. All it takes is saying two simple words as often as possible. thank you. Thank your spouse for loving you. Thank your parents for dinner. Thank your boss for your job. Thank your teacher for his or her work. Above all, thank God for everything. In the words of Solanus Casey, it's heaven begun for the grateful on earth. Thank you for listening. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com.
Archbishop Fisher from Sydney, Australia, putting out a very strong statement regarding the horrific act of terrorism that occurred in his country over the weekend, pointing out that over the last 2 years, there has been a festering atmosphere of public anti-Semitism that has resulted in intimidation, division, demonstrations, and the normalization of incendiary language. These actions, he says, have turned up the temperature and perhaps contributed to the radicalization, and this must stop. He said for the Archbishop, it's a very personal thing for him, as his great-grandmother was Jewish. Yet he pointed out that it's something personal for all Christians, as we are all children of the Jews. And so an attack on the Jews, the Archbishop says, is an attack on all of us. Joining us now to discuss what happened, of course, in Australia, but also the rise in anti-Semitism around the world, is Professor Roy Shulman, who was born and raised Jewish by Jewish parents. And his parents, fled Nazi Germany. Growing up, he received a very good Jewish education, followed by a Bachelor of Science degree from MIT, an MBA, magna cum laude from Harvard Business School, where he then joined the faculty as a professor of marketing. Now, while a Jewish marketing professor at Harvard, he received two supernatural experiences, one of Jesus and one of the Blessed Mother, resulting in his unanticipated and enthusiastic conversion to Catholicism. If you have not read his books or if you've not heard him speak, I really encourage it. It's an amazing, amazing story. He now writes, speaks, and teaches on Catholic theology, focusing on the relationship between Judaism and the Catholic Church, and he appears on EWTN frequently, has his own radio show and on internet live stream. And Roy, it's good to talk to you again. God bless you. And I'm sorry to talk to you in such a sad story, but I wanted to get your perspective, especially with your background, with your parents who fled Nazi Germany. And one of the victims in the attack in Australia was actually a Holocaust survivor. Thanks for joining us this morning.
No, thanks for having me.
So your thoughts after this happened?
My thoughts after this happened?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is going to sound a little bit weird, but some of the listeners may be aware of all of the attacks on Christmas markets in Europe the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They pretty much stopped having them in Germany and France and Italy and so forth because of all of the, frankly, murderous attacks in those Christmas markets. You're aware of that, right?
Well, I live in Italy part-time. I didn't see it in our part of Italy. Maybe it's occurring maybe more toward the north, but because it's closer to Germany where some of the other ones have occurred. But there is concerns about security, absolutely.
Well, but the thing is, I'm not really coming in from left field. The attacks on the Christmas markets in Europe and the attack on the Hanukkah celebration in Australia are two manifestations of the same thing, which is, mm-hmm. well, they clearly are two manifestations of the same thing. They're always committed by members of a certain religion that have a political affiliation with militant Islam, and they have the same intention, which is basically to, I'll back up, and just every country which is Islamic today didn't used to be Islamic. They all used to be Christian or Jewish or Zoroastrian or Hindu, and now they're Islamic. And this is the process by which Islam engages its great commission. Christianity has a great commission to go out and make disciples of all nations. And Islam has a great commission, which is that the world is divided into the world of Islam and the world at war. And the Great Commission in Islam is to convert the world at war into the world under submission to Islam.
So in other words, it sounds like you're saying, and correct me if I'm not interpreting you correctly, is that there are certain people who are doing a better job of, let's say, I wouldn't say evangelizing, but pushing their faith versus what we should be doing.
Well, the difference being, we have to evangelize by winning hearts and minds.
Exactly.
They evangelize by force, which is a much easier process.
Right. Right. So in terms of Australia, the bishop the Archbishop of Sydney put a very strong statement. I think you heard me read it. His great-grandmother was Jewish. He was talking about how there were signs all over the place. And this has come out now over and over again. And people are criticizing the Australian government for not doing anything, even though they were aware of rising anti-Semitism. What is it about these particular groups of people that the law enforcement, that certain politicians are afraid to address when this is happening over and over and over again? And as you said, in other areas affected by people of other religions, but usually it's done by another particular religion.
I'm kind of, you know, speculating there, but I think politicians are very, you know, have very sensitive antenna for antagonizing a significant population. And I think even in the United States, I started this conversation by talking about that the fundamental problem is the Great Commission in Islam. That is an issue that nobody wants to admit, certainly not a politician. They don't want to say what we have is a collision between freedom of religion and the Great Commission of one of the religions.
In terms of what we can do, how do we respond to this as faithful Catholics? Because these stories happen over and over again, and they're so overwhelming. I can remember sitting actually in the airport, seeing this happen and going on my phone and looking at the news, obviously, on our way home from traveling from overseas. But it keeps happening, Roy, over and over and over again, as you pointed out. What can we do? Obviously, we have to pray. But what do we need to do to bring more attention to this and somehow to get to the heart of this problem?
There was 2 days after October 7th in 2023, there was a march in Sydney, Australia, of probably about 30 to 50,000 people chanting "Gas the Jews." That was tolerated. There was another march in Sydney 2 years later. Just a couple of months ago. Reports vary between 100,000 and 300,000 people, including the Lord Mayor of Sydney, that was condemning Israel for the Gaza, quote, genocide, close quote. If that is being tolerated and supported by the political authorities, this is the fruit of it.
Yeah. Okay, so then what do we do about that? Do we talk to our politicians? What do we do? Is there any kind of a solution in which Catholics can be involved to do something proactive here in addition to praying?
Well, I think one thing that they could do, I don't know how successful they would be, is try to get the bishops to not pretend that there is no problem with expansionist Islam in any country, in any Christian country.
Archbishop Fisher seems to be aware of this and is addressing it. What did you think of his statement that came out?
I think it's a good statement, but he's addressing it because of what happened 2 days ago, 3 days ago. He didn't, I mean, in other words, when it happens in Boston, the Bishop of Boston will address it, but until it happens in Boston, he won't.
There's one thing to look at the horrible acts of terrorism, wherever it may be, in Israel, in Europe, as you mentioned, or in Australia, here in the United States, by these particular radical groups. It's another thing, though, to really try to understand it. This is what is so frustrating to me. Why are so many people, for example, so many people just seem to parrot what the media say, and they take up the role and they always talk about a particular group involved in the war between Hamas and Israel, as if, as you said, as if it were all Israel's fault, and they're not willing to hear both sides of the story and look at what's going on. How are they being radicalized? I'm not talking about people who are Muslim. I'm talking about people who were raised in, let's say, a Christian home, a Catholic home, or a Protestant home. Even some Jewish people who may not be active in their faith are expressing these sentiments, supporting Palestine as in Hamas.
They may be participating in the marches and so forth because they are what some famous communist leader called useful idiots. And they're certainly getting propagandized by, Islamic groups on college campuses. The largest funder of higher education from overseas in the United States is the government of Qatar. Kennedy School has a Qatar-funded chair, chaired professorship, and so forth. You know, there's a well-developed infrastructure to sway the minds of impressionable young people, just like you saw in Occupy Wall Street, and just like we saw back, if you're old enough to remember, the Vietnam War and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a surprise, but they're not the ones. They're not the ones making a shooting gallery out of a Hanukkah celebration.
No, absolutely. Talking with Professor Roy Shoman, and his books are fantastic. You need to grab both of them. Salvation is from the Jews, The Role of Judaism in Salvation History, and Honey from the Rock, 16 Jews Find the Sweetness of Christ. I love both those books. He teaches, he speaks, and he's on EWTN quite a bit and other radio outlets. He also has a daily internet live stream. All right, so what have you been saying on your programs and in other interviews that you've been doing in terms of where we go from here, Roy, when you see something like this?
I'm sorry to say it. Speak the truth about Islam. Speak the truth about Israel. Speak the truth about the history of the Middle East. Speak the truth about the campaign of influencing American and Western media by these countries. And I don't see anything else one can do other than, basically speak the truth and try to convert hearts and pray, of course.
Right.
And, of course, one of the advantages of speaking the truth is that you're inspiring and directing other people's prayer if they recognize the truth as the truth.
What are the sources to which you turn for information on what's happening in the Middle East? I'm just curious.
Okay. Anytime you have a polemical issue, I think there's only one strategy that works, which is to read the material from both sides and discern for oneself which is using, using tricks of debate and so forth and avoiding the truth, and the other, which is representing a consistent reality. So basically, I read all sides. After reading all sides, I certainly have some sources that by my discernment, on target 80 or 90% of the time, and other sources which are never on target or on target 10% of the time. And I form my judgment from that process.
I think that is a great way to do it, because you have to get, there are more than, definitely there's usually two or three, as someone with a journalism background, two, three, even four
sides of
the story.
Everybody makes sense.
Right.
If you only excuse me, I'm sorry, I shouldn't
That's
talk
okay.
over you. Everybody makes sense if you only listen to them. You have to listen to the counterpart to know, because everyone can make a good argument that short of more information makes perfect sense to you. Can I give you an example?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, because this really appalled me. I just heard this yesterday or the day before. Tucker Carlson says in his charming manner, "Are you aware that Christians are better off in Qatar than they are in Israel? That Qatar has more Christians than Israel? That Qatar has Christian churches? And that the Christian churches, the government pays for the land for the Christian churches, they're better off in Qatar." Here's the truth. The truth is there are more Christians in Qatar because they're essentially indentured servants from the Philippines. They're out to practice their religion.
Sorry that we were interrupted by the break. I was so interested in the response from Roy Shoman, that I forgot how long I've been doing radio. Apparently not long enough. Anyhow, we're going to have him back on. Some very important statements he made, and I appreciate what he was saying about the misinformation regarding some personalities out there. That's why it's super important to do your homework. And I would say, in addition to looking at what different sides are saying about various issues, to make sure that you always look at everything through the lens of Scripture and the teachings of the Catholic Church. What I love about the Catholic News Agency and EWTN, all of our outlets, they will give you what's happening. For example, if there's a story, they had the results of a certain survey that they did last week, right? And all these numbers came out. And they talked about, as we were talking with Dr. Stacy earlier, how many Catholics, when they are given the teachings, change their mind on IVF. And then they'll say, okay, here's the numbers, here's what Catholics are saying, here's what our survey found. But then they always give you references to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, as well as some additional church documents. And that's what's really important. So yes, you see what people are covering, And you watch, you know, whatever you think are good sources. Some are just absolutely ridiculous on both sides of the aisle. So you just want to kind of time if there's any left that are in the middle, which is few and far between, I know. But then you say, okay, this is what's being said out there by the so-called experts. But then you always, always, always weigh it and test it against Scripture and the teachings of the church. More Catholic Connection coming up, including Newman Guide News and a wonderful interview with the president of Walsh University. That's coming up on EWTN Radio Extra. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Tuesday morning, hour number two of CC with TT on the one, the only EWTN's Radio Extra. Great to be with you on a Tuesday morning and hope you're staying warm out there. Flew back from Italy yesterday, left the Rome area, and it was 60 degrees and landed in Michigan. I think it was 6 above. Hello. Welcome back to reality. However, we are supposed to be getting some warmer weather, as I mentioned earlier in the week. For us, anything above freezing is warmer, especially in winter. Okay. So for today, for the second hour of the program, I do hope you can stay tuned for the entire hour. We have a major announcement that I'm going to make about a very special and unique event that's coming up in March, involving the relics of St. Francis and the year of St. Francis. Because next year, the church and the world will be marking 800 years since the death of this great saint and church reformer, founder of the Franciscan Minors, of course, the Poor Clares, and of course, Third Order Franciscans, including there are a number of branches within the Franciscan Order, such as the Capuchins. But it's a big deal what they're doing next year. All kinds of events going on leading up to the anniversary of his death in October, the official date, but there's going to be so much. But this event that we're going to be talking about, there's a very, very small window of time and a window of an opportunity to take advantage of. And we've have ordered tickets for this event, and we'll tell you all about it coming up. So it's pretty, pretty big deal. And then we're going to have two segments with Newman Guide News, Kelly Solomon, and Tim Collins, who's a president of Walsh University. We're going to be talking about strengthening Catholic identity in colleges, which is a huge, huge, important topic. Of course, we love the Newman Guide News segments with Kelly. She's doing such a great job. And she, of course, is with the Cardinal Newman Society and joins us on Tuesdays for our Newman Guide News. So we were talking in the first hour with Roy Shoman, Professor Shoman, who was raised Jewish and converted to Catholicism. His parents were, they escaped the Nazis. One of them, I think, was a Holocaust survivor, about the importance of what you're exposed to at various levels. And a lot of the brainwashing, the radicalization we know happens at the college level. And this is why it's so important to strengthen Catholic identity at college campuses, high school campuses, high school campuses around the country. Super crucial in terms of what are we going to be producing with these students? How are they going to be contributing to society if they have such a radicalization and believe things that are false about the world, about the church, about Christians? Then, Houston, we have a very big problem. So we'll discuss that, of course, with Tim and Kelly, and that's coming up in the second hour, this second hour of the program on EWTN Radio Extra. Let's take a look at the weather. We have additional storm systems, according to the National Weather Service, impacting the Pacific Northwest, and then lake effect snow is continuing. Heavy lake effect snow continuing into today east of Ontario, Lake Ontario. A lake effect snow warning remains in effect. A second Pacific cold front will cross the Pacific Northwest tomorrow. And then this is going to be followed by another atmospheric river. Each of these features will bring additional periods of gusty winds, mountain snow, and heavy to excessive rainfall with a renewed flooding threat. So Washington is just getting clobbered. And according to our news this morning, apparently it's going to be happening, as you just heard, and with the Weather Service again. Right now, it's 3 minutes past the hour. It's a Tuesday morning, December 16th. Great to be with you on EWTN's Radio Extra. Let's get started with the news, shall we? Police in Australia confirming the gunman in the Bondi Beach mass shooting had ISIS flags in their car. Speaking at a Tuesday news conference today, the New South Wales Police Commissioner Mal Lanyon also said there were IEDs in the vehicle.
We continue to work through the motive of this tragedy, and we'll continue to do so. And I think it's really important that our investigators continue to be given time to do that.
At least 15 people were killed Sunday when a father and son opened fire at a Hanukkah event at the Sydney beach. More than two dozen remain hospitalized, and some of them are in critical condition. The 50-year-old gunman was fatally shot by police. The 24-year-old is in critical condition as well. And the Pope is reaching out to the Australian community, sending prayers and a message of support. As Kelsey Gussie with Vatican News tells us, a special telegram was sent to the Archbishop of Sydney.
In his telegram, Pope Leo expressed his deep sadness over the loss of life in the Jewish community, who had gathered for a Hanukkah celebration. The Holy Father offered a spiritual closeness to all those affected by this senseless act of violence. The telegram shared the Pope's renewed hope that those tempted to violence will undergo conversion and seek the path of peace. He offered his prayers for all those still recovering, as well as consolation for those grieving the loss of a loved one. Pope Leo commended the dead to God while invoking the divine blessings of peace and strength upon all Australians. Earlier in the day, Catholic Archbishop of Sydney, Anthony Fisher, issued a statement calling for change. The Archbishop described the attack as a brazen and callous disregard for human life. He called the hatred some people have towards all Jews as an unspeakable evil that must be repudiated by every Australian. Any attack on an individual Jew is an attack against the entire Jewish community and is an affront to our way of life as Australians. Archbishop Fisher pointed out that over the last 2 years, an atmosphere of public anti-Semitism has been festering, which led to intimidation, division, demonstrations, and the normalization of incendiary language. He said these actions have turned up the temperature and perhaps contributed to radicalization, and he stressed that this must stop. The Archbishop pointed out that all Christians are children of Jews. So, an attack on the Jewish community is an attack on everyone.
Meanwhile, as Nick Harper reports from Australia, the country or nation is vowing a crackdown on guns, even though they do have some of the most strict gun laws in the world. They're also looking to crack down on anti-Semitism after the attack on the Jewish community.
The murders in Australia, where mass gun violence is rare, has shocked the country and led to calls from officials to further tighten gun restrictions. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says he's looking at additional tightening on what are already strict gun laws. He's also said that his government is working to eradicate anti-Semitism. But some within the Jewish community have voiced feelings that an attack of this nature was inevitable, pointing to growing anti-Jewish sentiment in the country. A father and son reportedly carried out the attack. The father was killed in the incident. The son remains in hospital, along with dozens of their victims. Nick Harper reporting.
Heightened security continuing in the New York City area following this past weekend's deadly attack and a Hanukkah celebration in Australia. Rabbi Shane in Tenafly, New Jersey, is honoring Rabbi Eli Schlangler, who has deep ties to Crown Heights, Brooklyn, and was among those killed in the Australia attack.
To have a Chabad rabbi on the job, like, you know, he was murdered as he was doing the Hanukkah event.
In New Jersey, Governor Phil Murphy says there is stepped up security at synagogues and Hanukkah celebration throughout his state in reaction to the shootings. The New York Police Department increasing security at Jewish houses of worship and Hanukkah celebrations. President Trump is hosting a Hanukkah reception this evening at the White House. The event has been held by the sitting president since that tradition began by George W. Bush back in 2001. On Sunday, President Trump issuing a statement on the Jewish holiday saying his administration continues to stand firmly with the Jewish people and to defend the right of every believer to worship freely and without fear of persecution. And officials in Rhode Island say they are working round the clock to apprehend the man who shot and killed two students and wounded nine others at Brown on Saturday. Professor or Providence Mayor Brett Smiley said officers from several agencies are actually working on the case.
This community will heal from this. We will move forward. But that doesn't make light of, and I'm certainly not making light of, the fear and anxiety that persists. But the only way we're going to move forward through it is one step at a time, and today's one of those steps.
He added students should feel safe to return to the campus of Brown University. Rhode Island governor saying he would like nothing more than to see a quick arrest. Residents have been on edge after a person of interest was detained, only to be released by police soon after. Police, meanwhile, releasing new video of the suspect dressed in black, wearing a mask, who can be seen walking from the Ivy League school after the shooting. And the son of Hollywood director and actor Rob Reiner is now in custody after Reiner and his wife were found dead inside their Los Angeles home over the weekend. That, according to jail records. Morgan Chesky has more on the investigation into the apparent stabbings.
Overnight, police canvassing the affluent Brentwood neighborhood, with investigators saying they intend to speak to every member of the Reiner family to, quote, get to the facts of the investigation.
Reiner's son Nick has been open in the past about his struggles with drug addiction and his tumultuous relationship with his famous father, Rob Reiner. Rob Reiner was 78 years old. His wife, producer Michelle Singer Reiner, was 68. And President Trump says he does think an end to the Russia-Ukraine war is getting closer. Speaking from the White House, the president saying he spoke with a number of European leaders recently who want the war to end as fast as possible.
Things are going along pretty well. 27,000 soldiers were killed last month. Shouldn't happen. Should have never happened. Should have never started. That war should have never, ever started. But it did, and we're trying to get it solved.
Trump saying too many people are dying as a result of the fighting, and the sooner it ends, the better for everyone involved. The president also saying they are working to get Russia and Ukraine on the same page. And the president is declaring illegal fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. He signed an executive order yesterday while awarding Mexican border defense medals to U.S. military members at the Oval Office.
With this historic executive order I will sign today, we're formally classifying fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction, which is what it is. No bomb does what this is doing. 200,000 to 300,000 people die every year.
Trump saying drug cartels are running rampant on the Mexican border before he took office. The president said the soldiers honored took part in important border operations. Secretary of War Pete Hegseth was also in the attendance in the room and said the medals were originally given to U.S. soldiers in the 1800s. Scott Carr tells us the president has some road trips or some flying in his future to North Carolina.
The former chair of the RNC and current Republican senatorial candidate Michael Whatley announced on social media Monday that Trump is scheduled to make a stop at Rocky Mount on Friday. The White House hasn't released specifics of the visit, but it comes just over a week after President Trump kicked off what was billed at the time as a major push to address affordability concerns among voters. I'm Scott Carr in Washington.
The White House says the president will act if Congress cannot come up with a bill to fix rising health care costs. That's according to the White House press secretary. She was asked about the Senate voting down dueling partisan measures over Affordable Care Act subsidies. Caroline Levitt saying the president will be addressing the issue soon. Health care costs will be spiking for 22 million Americans if the ACA subsidies are allowed to expire at the end of the year. And the holidays, of course, are upon us, and the U.S. Postal Service says it's prepared for the shipping rush. There are some important shipping deadlines to keep in mind. Tomorrow is the last day to send your items off in time for them to arrive by Christmas if you're using USPS Ground Advantage or First Class Mail Service within the lower 48 states. The deadline is Thursday for Priority Mail Service delivery and this Saturday for Priority Mail Express. And finally, in our news segment, about 12 minutes past the hour, one of the fastest growing targets for scammers right now isn't holiday shoppers. It's people trying to adopt a pet, and buyers are losing thousands, sometimes without ever seeing an animal.
The Better Business Bureau says pet scams increased from October to January, and that 80% of online pet ads are fake. If you're looking for a furry friend, insist on meeting the animal in person. Consider doing a reverse image search. Scammers often steal cute pet photos from social media or Google. And remember, your local shelter may already have the perfect match. I'm Sarah Walters.
It is a Tuesday morning, December 16, 2025. Great to be with you in this third week of Advent already. My goodness, it's going by quickly, too quickly for my taste. I love Advent. I just love the reflections and the readings and just the time to ponder as our Blessed Mother did. We hope you ponder quickly, though, a big event that we're promoting, a special opportunity to have a unique experience with the one, the only, Saint Francis of Assisi. We'll tell you about it up next.
Thank you.
16 minutes past the hour. It is a Tuesday morning, December 16, 2025, and I'm very excited to make a special announcement this morning in this 2 cent segment. As you know, Deacon Dominic and I live part-time in Italy. We spend about 6 months of the year there, about 3.5 months off, 3 months on, blah, blah, blah. And we just returned yesterday. In the last week or so, we were learning more and more about what's happening next year in 2026, which is a huge year of St. Francis. Now, if you'd like more information, you can go to sanfrancescovive.org. So sanfrancescovive, that's V as in Victor, I, V as in Victor, E.org. San Francesco, C-E-S, right? C-O, francescovive.org. That gives you a summary of everything that is happening next year, well, pretty much everything. I mean, they're putting it up little by little because there's so much going on. And it's a beautiful website. It's really, really pretty. It says, like a grain of wheat fallen into the earth, the body of Francis of Assisi has become a fruitful seed able to sprout and bear fruit over time. All right, so what's happening? One of the big events taking place in March, actually February and March, will be the removal of his remains, his relics, from a very large tomb in the lower crypt of the Basilica of St. Francis. Now, if you've never been to Assisi, there's a huge basilica, the Basilica of St. Francis, in Assisi, on top of Mount Sebastio. Of course, it's part of the old town. And higher up, you have St. Clair, you have San Rufino, which is really the cathedral there in the town. But the crypt is below. There's three layers of this beautiful church of St. Francis, if you've never been there. You could see more on my series that I did last year for EWTN News and EWTN Mission Advancement. It's EWTN.com/Saints in Italy. Again, EWTN.com/Saints in Italy. We take you through the basilica and show you the different parts. And so it's actually pretty amazing. This has never, ever happened before. So the church has approved removing the relics of St. Francis from the tomb in the lower crypt. And it's just really quite something. And what they're going to do is allow for visible veneration. Visible veneration of the relics, okay? And what that means is you'll be able to see his remains in a reliquary that will be on the altar in the lower crypt. So let me give you a little bit of background. The Catholic Church, commemorating the 800th anniversary of St. Francis' death, he died in 1226. With papal approval, the saint's remains, normally kept in the crypt, will be moved from the crypt to the foot of the papal altar in the lower church. This is for public veneration by pilgrims and faithful, and something that has never, ever happened in history. The exposition is scheduled to begin in February, and it is supposed to be a very short period of time, February to the end of March. Okay? Now, here's the deal. You can't just go. Now, normally you can just go to the basilica, walk in anytime during the opening hours, go down to the crypt, go there for Mass, go to venerate the relics, which is just wonderful. And this is free, but you can't just do it on a, you know, come and go basis. You have to have an appointment. You have to actually have tickets. And this is what I'm getting to in terms of the announcement. Corporate Travel Service and our partners, Alliantour in Italy, have secured 30 spaces. Officially, we've confirmed 30 spaces. So 30 people can join us. We are leaving on March 9th, and we are doing a 5-night stay in Italy. We are going to have a full tour of Assisi, including the opportunity, guided by one of the Franciscans, to venerate the relics, visibly see them and venerate them in the lower area of the church. And again, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It's never happened before. We'll be staying in that area around Assisi. We're also going to be, in addition to having a full tour of Assisi, we are also going to be going to Spoleto. Now, if you don't know about Spoleto, it's a very important town in the life of St. Francis. Francis, after being defeated in the Battle of Collestrata and imprisoned in Perugia, decided that he still wanted to pursue his dream of being in the military and being a hero. So after a year of recuperating, after becoming very sick while imprisoned in Perugia, he recuperates, or so he thinks, and he hops on basically his high horse still had not really started to move in a good direction back toward the Lord, and is thinking, I am going to fight for the papal army. I am going to be a hero, and I'm going to come back, and everyone's going to be proud of me. So he was on his way to southern Italy, where there were troops defending the Pope and the church. On his way, he had to stop at Spoleto because he became sick again. And so he couldn't go on. And so, number one, it's very important because with that defeat, he comes back to Assisi, and that's the time that he began his real search for God. And in the same year, 1205, after returning from Spoleto, that's when he feels drawn to go pray at the nearby San Damiano convent, which we'll also visit in Assisi. And that's where he heard the cross, the famous San Damiano cross, which is now located in the Church of St. Clair, where he heard the cross speak to him, Francis, rebuild my church. As you know, it's in ruins. And so Spoleto is extremely important for that reason, but also because in Spoleto, in the beautiful cathedral there, St. Mary of the Assumption, there is only one of two surviving handwritten letters of St. Francis. So we'll be going to Spoleto. You'll be able to go to the cathedral to see the letter. I'll be giving talks on the conversion and the life of St. Francis. I'm writing a new book, a second of my Italy books, all about St. Francis. I'm doing a lot of research. And we're also going to be going to where he received the stigmata in Tuscany, in Laverna, Italy. There is a beautiful shrine in a hermitage, a church. We'll spend some time there reflecting on the stigmata that he received, what happened to him at that period of time. You'll be amazed at how high up that shrine is. And when you think about it, where we're going, Spoleto, Assisi, right, all these different places, Laverna, you'll get a real sense for the determination and the sheer grit and zeal of St. Francis. Now, he did ride to Spoleto on a horse, but even going on horseback to these places, think about the feat that was. He was one of the most traveled saints at that period of time. He made it all the way over to the Holy Land and even Egypt, not to mention all over Italy. So you would get a real great perspective on the saint in addition to this very unique and very limited opportunity to venerate the relics outside the tomb, which has never happened before. All right, so what do you need to do? We're leaving March 9th. It's five nights. You need to call corporate travel. There's no commitment. We just, right now, the flyer will be out this week, but I just want to put that out there to our listeners so you could take advantage of an early announcement. You could just give us your name and your number, and we'll give you more details, the pricing, official information. But this is just if you're interested. So basically, putting you on a waiting list. The number is 866-468-1420. 866-468-1420. Just ask them to put you on the waiting list for the Relics of St. Francis with Teresa Tomeo and Deacon Dom. They're ready to take your calls. We're putting together, again, a general list, but we only have 30 spaces. So if you're interested, you need to let us know quickly because this window of opportunity is very short to see these relics. February 22nd to March 22nd only. So it's 1 month, 4 weeks. And again, we have tickets for the week of March 9th. I believe our tickets are for March 11th, but the group will be leaving, God willing, on March 9th. And it's also a great, great opportunity for an introduction to Umbria and to these places so strongly connected to the life of St. Francis of Assisi, and also stopping in Greccio and Orvieto. Greccio is where he established the first crèche. We'll hit that on the way back to Rome. We'll have a very nice farewell dinner in Rome. So Greccio, Orvieto for the Eucharistic miracle. Greccio is where he again established the first crèche. We'll go to Assisi, venerate the relics, have a tour. We'll go to Spoleto, where his conversion began, and of course Laverna, where he received the stigmata. Plus talks from me and Deacon Dom, talks from me about St. Francis, Mass every day in beautiful places, and some wonderful time for fun and fellowship as well. The phone number again, one more time, is 866-468-1420 for more information. We'll be right back. always great to catch up with Kelly Solomon from the Cardinal Newman Society for our Newman Guide News on a Tuesday. She's been doing such a great job of bringing us important stories, all the great work that the Cardinal Newman Society is doing, and also introducing us to great people in education, including an additional guest this morning that Kelly has brought on with us, Tim Collins, president of Walsh University. Kelly, thanks again for the great work you've been doing all year on this segment. You're doing just a fantastic job. But to introduce our guest, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can introduce Tim. And I have a lot of questions this morning. I'm sure you did too, but thank you both for joining us. So, Kelly, introduce our guest this morning, please.
Yes, great to be on with you, Teresa, and great to have Dr. Tim Collins, president of Walsh University, on with us today. Walsh University is located in North Canton, Ohio. It is one of the faithful Catholic colleges we recommend in the Newman Guide. And Walsh is a really wonderful institution. There's more than 100 academic majors and minors at the university. All students take at least 5 courses between Catholic theology and philosophy. A service learning course is a requirement for all students. The university offers daily mass and confession times, lots of opportunities for Eucharistic adoration, wide variety of student clubs and activities, including NCAA Division II sports. So it's really a wonderful institution, and its Catholic identity just keeps getting stronger and stronger thanks to the good work of Dr. Tim Collins, who's been the president since 2019. And now the college is celebrating its 65th anniversary, and Dr. Tim Collins was just invested in the Order of Malta, and so I thought it'd be a great opportunity to bring Dr. Collins on the show and have him tell us more about his work at Walsh University.
Well, Doctor, great to talk to you, by the way. And I'm very sorry you're in the same area as Dr. Ray Garendi. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Dr. Ray's just on the other side of town. He's on campus all the time. But,
oh, my gosh, you poor thing. We do this all the time. Ray and I are like brother and sister. We're constantly teasing each other on the air. So I just had to say that. But anyway, it's great to have you on. First of all, I want to thank you for your commitment to higher education. But thank you for all of your service in the military. Your bio was amazing, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much, Teresa. Thank you for having us. And, you know, swords up. It's just a privilege to be on with you this morning.
So what led you into the area? You have quite a diverse background in addition to your great military background, all your service you gave to our country. But you were involved in executive leadership at Johns Hopkins. And so you've done a lot of different type of work. What led you to work in the area of education?
Well, I think I've been called here. I think it's just so lined up with what we try to teach our students about purpose, the changing nature of our purpose, to be open to what our purpose is and what it is to become. So the first phase of my life, I think, was just really about giving back to the here and now, which was, you know, my military service, taking care of the country, as it were, serving others in that way, in public service, in military service. And this phase of my life, I think, is all about leadership. It's about putting my fingerprints, my thumbprint on these kids and helping them to understand that they are called to something bigger than themselves. In higher ed today, we've turned this into a transaction. We've turned our students, we've turned their attention away from educational priorities and put it on everything but that. Mm. We're expecting universities and colleges to act like a business. And all of that is at the expense of mission and human formation. So I think I've been called here in this moment at Walsh to help bring us back to paying attention to this vision that we have of human person and truth. You know, for your listeners, they may not know this, that the Catholic Church invented higher education in 1088. The University of Bologna opened up in response to a question that the Pope asked in a statement that he made in 1079, that he claimed that the church is the only authority actually on the development of Christian doctrine, but he wasn't sure how to do that, and higher education was the response to that. So 937 years, faithful, authentic Catholic higher education institutions like those that are on the Cardinal Newman list, recommended colleges list, like the Cardinal Newman Society itself, that are contributing to helping us maintain that faithfulness to that tradition. So I think all of that has sort of brought me to here.
Thank you so much. And I have a number of questions. But Kelly, let me go back to you because I'm on the college's website, which is really fantastic, even the background. What I really like about this, Kelly, and Dr. Collins, you can jump in here. And this, I went to a mid-American college. It wasn't a Catholic college. But what I liked about my school, Central Michigan University, for my purposes as a journalism student, one of the things I looked for was a smaller class size because it was more hands-on experience, more one-on-one with the professors. And this is what you have. And Kelly, I think this is excellent. And I'll go to you first, Kelly. They also have this, as you mentioned, small class sizes and hands-on learning opportunities.
Yes, they do. And I really love how they, you know, Walsh, you're going to get that theology and philosophy no matter what your major is, but they have a wide variety of majors and minors in a variety of career-oriented fields. But they emphasize that formation and that that Catholic formation throughout a student's 4 years there, you know, through the clubs, through the activities, through the courses, through every aspect of campus life. I think one thing that stands out especially is their commitment to service. Dr. Collins, I'd love to hear more about that and why, you know, it's an emphasis for Walsh in your students' formation.
Yeah, Kelly, thank you for that. So we actually redid the general curriculum or the core of our education in 2020, and we added theology to it, added more theology. They had it, of course, but to just kind of reinforce that. And again, against this transactional view of the secular world, what we're trying to do is Walsh is a place where we really believe, teach, understand, model that there is unity in faith and reason. We have to pursue that. We want our students that are formed for both truth and service. So service is very, very much a part of what we do. So the service requirement, as Kelly mentioned, is there. There's an internship that is required of everyone. The health sciences are very popular here, and these, of course, are services. And so we're trying not to make this a place that's just about careers. Mm-hmm. In fact, that word career, I think, from the Catholic perspective, is really a dangerous word because I don't really think that here at 4 years at Walsh University or anywhere in higher education, we are necessarily providing all students for a particular job path that will never change. Careers,
right.
Just really the wrong thing to think about it. So we talk about it in terms of purpose and what it is they're called to do. And are equipping them, if they can discover their purpose while they're here, that's great. But more to the point, we need to give them the skill set to recognize that when things are changing, when you're called to do something else, when you have a different set of skills, and now you say, okay, now that I have this skill set, what am I supposed to do with it, that they can find an answer to that question, because the answer is there if we would just listen.
No, Doctor, I think what you're talking about, too, is vocation versus a career, because if you know your vocation, that could be in a number of different job applications, right?
Yes, I think so. I think we talk about vocation a lot, certainly, and it's right that we should do that. And so we sort of think of it in two different levels of vocation. There's that higher level of vocation. Are you called to, you know, singled life, to married life, to religious
right.
life?
Mm-hmm.
And then how are you living day to day? What is it that you're doing day to day to give back to others? And that could look like a lot of different things, even within the state of being married, even within the state of single life. I mean, for me, as Kelly mentioned, the Order of Malta, the Order of St. John of Jerusalem, I think what's most interesting is that it is allowing me to still live fully within my personal life, my professional life, and yet, you know, be more committed. Christ is asking more of me and what I am to do. So we're sort of in that same way of thinking about vocations.
Yeah. We have to take a break. More with Dr. Tim Collins, president of Walsh University, and, of course, Kelly Solomon from Cardinal Newman Society and Newman Guide News on a Tuesday. Welcome back, Catholic Connection. It's Tuesday. That means it's time for our Newman Guide News. Continue our conversation with Kelly Solomon from the Cardinal Newman Society. And she brought along a wonderful guest today, Dr. Tim Collins, president of Walsh University, except I'm really praying for him knowing that Dr. Ray Grindy is on the campus all the time. He's just looking for free food, probably, right, Tim? Is that what he's doing, going around
no
to the cafeteria?
No doubt about it. He cost me one time on an airplane asking for a drink.
going to you and you're having lunch, you're going to eat that? That's the tea. You're going to eat that? That's what he says to me. Right. Don't even get me started. No, he's wonderful. What a great influence,
a great
too,
man.
To have on the campus. He does such a great job. Okay, so many things that I want to ask you. And, Kelly, let me jump in, and you can feel free to comment. But it's interesting, you know, and God's timing is always perfect. Earlier today on Catholic Connection, the first hour, I interviewed Roy Schumann, Professor Schumann, who is an amazing convert from Judaism, about the horrible situation in Australia and the anti-Semitism that's growing on college campuses around the world and just in general. And he's talking about so many of these young people that are being radicalized. And, of course, he talked about the education problem that we have in the United States. What do you think, Dr. Tim, of what's happening with so many of these kids just buying into what the secular culture and radical leftist groups are saying? And a lot of this, as Kelly's reported repeatedly, is happening on Catholic college campuses.
Well, I think the kids are always going to buy into whatever they're being offered, whatever's being sold. Mm. And so I place all the blame on this on, you know, the leadership and the adults in the room, if you will. So the university experience, we're supposed to be the caretakers of society. You know, so goes the university system, so goes the Catholic university system, so goes the society. And so we're busy, have been busy. I think it's failing us actually at all levels, but in a profound way at the higher education level. We're too busy teaching them what to think instead of teaching them how to think. And so they only get one way of thinking about things. So in the higher ed system, we have essentially abandoned this idea that we're supposed to avoid partisan approaches, we're supposed to integrate faith and reason, we're supposed to practice hospitality, we're supposed to talk about solidarity and justice. And instead, we've gone to a model of offering the students, you know, instant gratification and things that spark the emotion, instead of things that move the heart. And our response at Walsh University, our response to the Cardinal Newman Society, is this renewed fidelity back to our mission, understanding, you know, we have tough conditions. So it's a sad state of affairs, and I think it starts with making sure the leadership is focused on what we're trying to do. Think about how we form not just students, but we also have to think about how do we form our employees, our staff, our faculty, our coaches. How do we form our trustees and make the whole governing system, you know, turn back to what we know is the way it's supposed to go. There's no other reason to explain why something has lasted 937 years except for faithfulness to the truth.
Right. Beautifully
said. So if we're willing to abandon that, then the system goes away.
And Kelly, this must be such a breath of fresh air for you in terms of what's happening at Walsh, right?
It is. It's so encouraging. And I think Dr. Collins makes a great point about he's really increased the number of Catholics on the staff and on the faculty. And I think personnel is policy, right? And so having those people in place to be able to form young people in truth and preparing them for their vocations as we were talking about earlier, and what Cardinal Newman, our patron, talks about so much of every person being prepared for that, that God has called them to some definite service. And Dr. Collins, I'd love to hear more about your plans for the future, this Walsh 4.0 strategic plan, and, you know, how it's responding to some of these challenges that Teresa brought up, the mental health challenges, the challenges from AI and other issues we see, and how, you know, remaining rooted in your mission is actually a response to all of these challenges young people are facing today.
Thank you for that, Kelly. So we are celebrating our 65th anniversary. So 65 years ago, the Brothers of Christian Instruction, which are a congregation of men whose charism was education, they brought to here, Stark County, North Canton, what was Lamennais College. And they moved it and created Walsh College. Bishop Walsh was the Bishop of Youngstown at the time, and he was very instrumental in bringing them here and getting them established, so the brothers named the institution after him. And all of the bishops of Youngstown have been very instrumental in helping the institution maintain its fidelity throughout its 65 years of history. Bishop Bonner continues that work today. And the dialogue between the institution and the bishop, that's one of those fault lines that we see out there In the country. But for the Walsh 4.0, what Kelly is talking about is, you know, Walsh 1.0, version 1.0, like software 1.0, that's when the brothers opened the place. 2.0, we went co-ed because we started with 67 men and it was just a men's institution for the first 10 years. Walsh 3.0 was the changeover from a college to a university. And now we're building Walsh 4.0, which is, you know, how do we prepare ourselves into the future for the situation we have today, where we find ourselves with students that are less prepared. We've all seen, probably some of your listeners may have found online or whatever, the national report card, where every year, you know, we do these tests and we look a lot at third graders because that tells us how they're going to do in eighth grade. We look at eighth graders, that tells us how they're going to do in high school, and we look at high school seniors, and that tells us how they're going to do in college. And last year, in every category in math and reading, every category, the numbers went the wrong way. Now, when American higher education first was formed, of course, with Harvard College in 1636, and then, you know, on we go, Georgetown, the first Catholic one being established here, it was only a three-year experience. And it went to four because the students were not prepared for the higher level experience. And now we find ourselves in 4, 5, 6, 7 year experiences with these students, and they're even less prepared. So we're thinking about, how do we combat this trend that we have towards secularization? How do we fight these fault lines between academic freedom and fidelity to the doctrine? How do we think about being really serious about forming our students to be leaders in their families, to be leaders in their communities, not just contributors in that Unitarian view, utilitarian view that the public education often has of just being a cog in the wheel in their employed status. So we are in an all-out attack on this, every aspect, intellectual, physical, mental, social, all of it, the whole person. We're just trying to return to what we know has worked for a long time.
Let me read you this story. One of my friends sent it this morning. It's such an obvious example of how things have just gone off the rails and what you were just talking about, Doctor, and Kelly, what you and I talk about every week. This is a story in the New York Post that's gaining some traction. The nation's largest labor union holding a conference earlier this month to train teachers on advancing LGBTQ plus justice. This months after, and this is what you just mentioned recently, Doctor, in your last response, the nation's report card revealing student scores in reading and math were hitting new lows. At the National Education Association gathering, educators spent valuable time learning the nuances of so-called neo-pronouns while being instructed on ways to subvert conservative villains and their own internal oppression. When someone calls you and tells you they are transitioning, do not question them about what they are doing. Attendees were told this, according to material obtained by conservative watchdog group Defending Education. So again, the craziness just continues. And it says, in keeping with the theme of combating and recognizing oppression, the conference included a land acknowledgement and a harsh critique of the United States. Oppressed people's stories are deliberately kept out of the telling of the story of what we know as United States of America. How in the world did these groups get so, so left-leaning, Doctor? It's just craziness.
It is, and, you know, I think we'd be well-served to return to the Founding Fathers with your comment, you know, right there at the end. You know, James Madison tells us that knowledge is the only guardian of true liberty. So if you really want to hang on to what you've got, you got to sort of look at all the knowledge, you got to tell the truth, you got to look both ways. I think we've gotten farther and farther away from that, in large measure because people have become convinced in some way, shape, or form that they can do this themselves. This is absolutely, you know, the work of the evil one. He's going to convince everybody you don't need anybody but yourself. Mm-hmm. And as long as we keep moving in that direction, this is what happens when we can no longer see what is actually happening right in front of us, which is why I return to, you know, my strong belief that so goes Catholic education, so goes the society, because we're going to be standing there the whole time to remind them that you are not in control, actually. Mm-hmm. You do have a purpose. This is the fundamental problem with the suicide with our youth today. You know, we're losing a lot of students, young people committing suicide, and they hit these low points in their life. They see all their friends on TikTok, Yik Yak, whatever, all happy, happy, and they think they're the only ones that have the problem.
Right.
And then they make a disastrous choice, And along that path are the challenges we have with mental health. And it comes back to our failure as a culture, as a society, to look at each person and say to them straight, direct, in their, you know, eye to eye, you are special. You are here for a reason. You are here for a purpose. You're here to do something that only you can do. And if you don't do it, it doesn't get done. We just don't talk that way. We don't think that way. We're just completely believe that we're independent. And as long as that just accelerates, then you end up with all this silliness where, you know, the more intolerant you are, they view that to be tolerant.
Right. That's just, we only have about 3 minutes left. I have to ask you this too, and Kelly, if you just let me jump in here and you can comment as well. But yeah, given your amazing military background and what that means in terms of discipline and education and commitment, I don't know if you heard a story that surfaced just recently about these Ivy League schools providing all these different types of safe spaces for the young people who aren't even, let's say, diagnosed with attention deficit disorder or another situation where they might need special attention. There are these kids that are coming in and saying, well, I'm stressed, so therefore I need more time on my exam, or I'm stressed, and therefore I can't take a test with other people in the room. And they're granting all of this special treatment. Okay, so how in the world is anyone like this, and speaking, even if you're not, if you don't have the extensive military background like you do, doctor, with the discipline, how in the world are you going to handle any type of disappointment or struggle in life if everything has to be protected, you have to be coddled every which way?
Yeah, that's just, we're just not dealing with reality. You know, there's another report out there that shows in these Ivy League schools, three quarters of them at Harvard and some of these other places, the students are now labeled as disabled.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. They're labeled as disabled, even though they're not.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And so they just won't be ready for life. Life is hard. Someone needs to tell them that.
Right. Get a clue. I mean, I don't know where you get the patience, because I'd be like, are you kidding me? My Italian jersey would come out all over the place.
But well, that's what we're called to do. Can we imagine Jesus? He was probably pretty frustrated sometimes, too, that human side of him. But we just see something
bigger. I know,
but
he's also God and has a lot more patience with people than I do. I'm still learning in that category. All right, we're wrapping up. Kelly, any final thoughts? But Dr. Collins, great to chat with you. Thank you again for your great work at Walsh and your incredible background and your dedication to truth and, of course, the country. We so appreciate it. Kelly, any final thoughts before we wrap up? Have about a minute.
Well, you know, I love, Dr. Collins, your line of, as Catholic education goes, so goes society. And, you know, we can look on that on the one hand and see these negatives, but I see, you know, the Newman Guy colleges like Walsh, and doing such great work forming virtuous, happy, joyful students who are going out and living what God is calling them to in their lives. So I'm so grateful for your work. Keep it up, and I can't wait to see you soon.
No,
and doctor,
so
I know some good security people that can help you keep Grandy off the campus if you need some help.
Security. We'll take Dr. Ray anytime. We'll take his sense of humor. We can sometimes use it.
Yeah, I know we do. He's a riot. I love him to death. Thank you both. You're both wonderful. Kelly, great job again. Kelly Solomon with the Cardinal Newman Society. Dr. Collins, God bless you. Merry Christmas. Enjoy the rest of Advent. And check out Walsh College in the Canton, Ohio area. They're doing great things. A great Catholic school. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for tuning in to Catholic Connection on a Tuesday morning, second hour of CC with TT on EWTN's Radio Extra. Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, produced by EWTN. Coming up tomorrow, have you heard about this book being pushed on young people, as in kids, called Abortion is Everything? I'm not kidding. It's real, and we'll discuss. Can you believe that? Abortion is Everything. What a title. What an awful title. What an awful thing. It's just so evil on all levels. And this is being marketed and pushed to babies, little kids. I'm not kidding you. I'm not usually speechless, but in this case, I read this story and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Anyhow, we'll also be talking with Joan Lewis, of course, for our Joan's Rome. The Vatican Nativity scene is up and running and lit. They, I think they... lighted it yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. And we'll talk about the Holy Father's message to Australia. And then Shrines and Wonders Wednesday. There's so much going on. I don't know what I'm going to talk about tomorrow for that segment. I'll think and pray about it, as I always do. So we appreciate you listening. In the second hour of the program, we are going to be talking about classical music to evangelize. How wonderful. How cool is that? We'll have two in-studio guests. Actually, three. Oh, we'll have three guests, one on the phone and two in studio. Spencer McIntosh, Jacob Maranek, and Krista Dalmazio. Again, using classical music concerts and classical music to evangelize and teach the faith. Very cool. We'll talk to you tomorrow. God bless.